let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. There are lots of things going on in this world today. For example, there are people who are in need of a home, and there are organizations out there that put people in touch with homes. Here to talk about one of those organizations from the Front Porch Community Services Program, I'd like to welcome Luke Barnesmore. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. So tell me a little bit first about Front Porch Community Services and then about Home Match.
Be happy to. So Front Porch is a 50-plus year nonprofit that provides housing and services for older folks. Mm-hmm. We have 19 life plan communities and 33 affordable housing communities across the state. And my work is with our community services division. We were developed really as an effort to impact issues, social isolation, food and nutrition, housing that have an outsized impact on older adults in the community. So with our Home Match program, we work with mostly older folks, so anyone over the age of 18 who have an extra room in their home or apartment or an accessory dwelling unit on their property, mm-hmm. we help them through the process of connecting and living with a community member that's seeking a more affordable housing option. So with our home providers, you know, we'll meet with them in their home, get a sense of who they might want to live with, help them to get the room ready to rent. We'll list the room, receive applications from folks looking for housing, get to know them as well. We really want to focus on making introductions between people who not only will meet each other's financial needs and the space would be right, but also folks that have some shared communication style, lifestyle preferences, the sort of things that make for a happy and healthy living together arrangement. We help to support with putting together a lease agreement once two folks do decide they'd want to move in together. And mm-hmm. in that, we go over all of the different questions about shared use of space. So is there parking? Is there storage? What are the guest policies, cleaning policies? Get all of those expectations on the table beforehand, and then we provide ongoing support throughout the match. So if anything comes up, our team is there and available to help to problem solve.
That sounds amazing. It sounds like you are working with both sides of the equation, both the person who has a space and the person who needs the space.
That's right. We see it as our responsibility to represent both parties in the relationship and make sure that both parties not only find housing stability throughout the process, but enter into another stable housing situation afterwards.
Excellent, excellent. So when you get these two parties together, how do you navigate the inevitable roommate issues that come up?
Yes, it's a great question. So first and foremost, in the same way that we really take a preventative approach when it comes to housing stability in the first place, really take a preventative approach when it comes to the kinds of issues that can come up among our participants. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, we really focus in on that personalized matching process. We want to put two folks together who have some shared communication style. They like to relate to the inevitable things that come up in a relationship in similar ways. They have some similar lifestyle preferences. We want to put people together that, you know, might have some shared desires around music or mm-hmm. what time they like to go to sleep, get up in the morning, those sorts of things, just to mitigate the risk that something will come up in the first place. The next really important preventative step is that living together agreement and really getting deep into the specificity. One question that I often bring up is, what's the temperature usually kept at in the house? And mm-hmm. is that going to work for both people?
Okay.
We found that one person maybe wants the heat on and the other wants the window open in the middle of winter. That can create conflict around the temperature in the house, also utility bills. And so by getting all of those expectations on the table beforehand, we find that folks are usually pretty much on the same page. There's much less of a risk for a surprise that might create conflict. And then with that ongoing support, again, being very proactive, and I've seen many a situation where there's some conflict starting to arise because, say, the washing machine has broken and it hasn't been fixed. And so we just get involved. We help to fix that. We want to relieve those underlying stressors. We do also have staff that are trained in mediation if it does become a more emotionally invested sort of a conflict that arises. Mm-hmm. We have third-party mediation services if need be, very uncommon, but they are in place. And then just being proactive and helping folks to be able to find a new housing situation if that ends up being what works best for them, helping to cover moving costs or the other kind of things that we can do to help lower the barrier to finding that space that's going to be the right fit for somebody.
Excellent. So you're a nonprofit organization, obviously. How are you guys funded to be able to keep moving forward?
Yes. So our baseline of funding comes from the Front Porch Communities Foundation. They provide about half of the budget for our program across the four counties we're in. That's Marin, San Francisco, Alameda, and Contra Costa counties.
Okay.
In San Francisco, we have funding from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. They've been a funding partner since 2017. We also have funding from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. That's a relatively new contract that's come up, and it's really part of the city's broader strategy to swim upstream when it comes to homelessness prevention. We can't just wait for folks to have housing instability emerge into the kind of crisis that leaves someone without a home.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rapidly rising rate of older folks who are facing first-time homelessness after the age of 50, and many of them end up sleeping in their cars because they just can't keep up with the cost of living in the Bay Area
anymore.
So what we're doing there is really trying to get to folks before things are right at the precipice, help to stabilize finances through that increased income that you get from renting the room or through finding a slightly more affordable option through renting a room, and also the social support. We work with a lot of folks that are living at home alone. Maybe they're at risk of a fall, and having somebody else living in the home provides that extra degree of companionship and support that makes aging in place possible.
Excellent. So for our listeners out there, I know we have listeners who are housing unstable, and I also know that we have listeners who may have an extra room in their home. So how do the different people get involved with your program to be able to make that home match?
Yes. So the easiest way, if you are comfortable using the internet, is to go to our website. That's www.homematchfp.org. You can also just give us a phone call. And on the website, you'll find each of those numbers. But for San Francisco County, the best number to call is 415-351-1000. That's 415-351-1000. You give us a call, you'll reach one of our program managers. They can help to get you an application in whatever way makes the most sense for you. We have digital applications. We also have physical applications that can be mailed to somebody if maybe there's a little bit less comfort using technology to deal with housing issues.
Excellent. And so that, could you just repeat that number one more time?
Yes, I'd be happy to. It's 415-351-1000.
Excellent. And that's for, and they would ask for home match. And I know that you're part of an umbrella organization. So are there other organizations that also could help people who maybe have housing instability?
So that phone number that I gave is a direct line to the Home Match San Francisco office.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give a call to that number, and if you're in another county, welcome to call that number. They'll happily transfer you over to another one of our county offices if that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think service navigation can be a little bit of an interesting question in San Francisco. You
sure.
know, there are a lot of different doors and different ways to get in. I would really recommend taking a look at some of the city and county websites. The Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, as an example, is a major funder for most of the housing stabilization programs in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for support, but it seems like shared housing might not be the best fit, I would very much encourage reaching out to the folks at the Mayor's Office and see if maybe they have a suggestion on another housing program that could meet your unique needs.
All right. Well, Luke Barnesmore, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and for making people aware of the Home Match program. I think it's very important.
I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, people of Earth, if you know someone who is maybe housing unstable, or you know someone who has a room in their home, but they are wanting to find someone, find a good match for them, then this is the program for you.
I've got a new home.
Don't you know now, boy?
desert, way up in the kingdom.
Way back up in glory, keep telling you
how. Oh, I got a new.
It won't be long. You look for me and I'll be gone. I'm going to heaven to sing and shout. There'll be nobody to turn me out. Oh, yes, sir.
I've got a telephone.
Luna boys,
way down in my bosom, keep telling you
how. Oh, I got a telephone.
Oh Lord, when I get lonesome, sad and blue, and I don't know just what to do, I'll go down on my bended knees and I'll talk to Jesus just when I please. I tell.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That's the Pilgrim Travelers, and I've Got a New Home from the Specialty Story box set. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there's theater, and then there's theater. And we've got theater coming up. There's a brand new production out there called Dirty White Teslas, Make Me Sad. And here to talk about that, I'd like to welcome the playwright Ashley Smiley. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So before we get started, tell me, Ashley, how long have you been writing?
Oh, I've been writing for quite some time. I started, you know, even in my wee times in second grade, really got into it in middle school, did a lot more writing and performance starting in high school. So, yeah, I think playwriting, though, in particular, would be more around undergrad and grad school, in my good old days.
So I want to talk about the title, which the title alone is intriguing because I feel the same way. Dirty White Teslas Make Me Sad. Tell me about how you came up with that title.
So for the title, a few different ways. And one, you know, I was having a really interesting conversation with my mom. We're driving down the street in San Francisco and we catch this Tesla that looks like it got driven through, you know, Joshua Tree in the wet season. And we just took that moment and observed just all the things that could represent, right? And we're talking about gentrification, we're talking about privilege, we're talking about just even the way that the white Tesla came in as like a harbinger of doom for San Francisco, you know, art and culture and just what it brought to the table. And then at the same time, after looking at that, I also got really interested in the way that the pill culture in San Francisco was changing when it came to substances, and found out that there are actually ecstasy pills with the Tesla logo, and that there was a dirty white one that was actually seen as very, very dangerous, right? And so then looking at that also, like, what does this look like in terms of, like, Teslas and the conversations that they're starting and the different ways that they're manifesting in San Francisco?
I see. So what is then what's the elevator pitch for Dirty White Teslas Make Me Sad? And I really just enjoy saying the title over and over again.
Dirty White Teslas Make Me Sad is a fever dream and a love letter. It is a call to action, and it's really a humanizing of the experience of gentrification in San Francisco, and especially for Native San Franciscans. Yeah.
So is this a comedy, a tragedy, a musical? What is it?
It is definitely not a musical. You know, I back and forth, I would want to say it's a tragic comedy, but it's real life. You know, there's comedic moments. There's also moments of tragedy. There's the blending of the two. There's music. There's projection. It's multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary. But yeah, I would actually really love to find out what audience members say once they come see it and how they want to categorize it.
All right. Well, so who are some of the characters in this play?
So our main character is Sloosh, also known as Naima, and she's a young Afro-Latina woman born and raised in San Francisco, and her mother, Delcina, are faced with the fact that they have 72 hours to get out of their apartment because they're being priced out of the city, which is something that everyone, you know, who's a native San Franciscan and has even just been paying attention to the way that San Francisco has over time can relate to. And so we see them kind of deal with this time crunch. And Naima herself is going through a kind of existential, spiritual crisis of sorts. One, for herself, but also in terms of being able to try and rationalize how her city that she has grown up in is now becoming inaccessible to her, right? Having the rug kind of symbolically pulled up from under her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have her uncle, Papadou, who is, you know, kind of like an old school, was in the game, but is now out, you know, working in a shop. But he has an in on this new kind of bipping and pill culture that then introduces us to the crew of Cold Cuts, Baby Girl, Caesar, and Brute. And those are the four folks who not only are, you know, paying attention to the way that crime is changing and the way that technology is affecting, you know, criminal endeavors, but these are also the folks who are out there bipping your cars. And, you know, then hearing about kind of how they got into their world, and they all come together, and it becomes a really, really hardcore 72 hours.
Nice. So who are the actors who are portraying these characters?
So we have Anna Marie Sharp, who's playing Sloosh. We have Tanika Baptiste, who's mm-hmm. playing Delcina.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Amador, aka One Way, is our Papadou. And then we have Jessica Racinos as Brute. We have Lauren Garcia as Caesar. We have Jamela Cross as Baby Girl. And we have Yio Ornelas as Cold Cut.
Wow. I love all the nicknames. You know, just gives it that much more flavor.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we're working with, not only production-wise in terms of the light character and the projection character, et cetera, but also within the relationships and the characters themselves is, you know, who are you in the daytime and who are you at night?
Mm.
And the two different worlds in... Also looking at that in the macro level, like what is San Francisco like in the daytime and what is San Francisco at night? You know, mm-hmm. how do those two things interplay? So, yeah, all of the nicknames kind of reflect those alternate egos and what takes over time.
How long did it take you to write this play? And like when did you finish it? Did you finish it during the pandemic, most recently, or...?
I started it before the pandemic, so mm-hmm. I'd say it's been about like 5 years. And to be honest, you know, the beautiful thing about it being a new play and also being able to stay up to date and in conversation with community and in conversation with what's going on in the city, you know, it might be quote unquote done now.
mm-hmm.
But we'll see. But it's taken that long just to really, you know, figure out, one, the form that it was going to come in,
mm-hmm.
What methods of storytelling we wanted to use, but then also really honing in on what the story is. And at first it was all about, you know, the car culture and substances and things like that, but mm-hmm. I realized I really wanted to hone in on the human experience, not article, not the line item, but the actual individuals who are facing this every day,
mm-hmm.
especially Black San Franciscans, and and what that internal experience is really like for them.
It makes it sound like it went through a number of iterations and that it's a very different animal than what it was when you started out.
Yeah, definitely has evolved and stretched and dipped and done all types of things. And what's been really beautiful about even just approaching these last few days in tech, mm-hmm. even going back and kind of excavating or resurrecting old pieces of text and bringing it into the new script and being able to play around like that to just really tighten up the story. So I'm really excited for people to see this iteration.
Okay, well, with that in mind, where is it playing? When does it start? How do we get tickets?
Yeah, so it is premiering this week, February 28th, uh-huh. March 17th at the Magic Theater in San Francisco. So it's over there in the marina. Hang on out. There's plenty of parking. There's no reason not to come. And people can go to magictheater.org. That's magictheatre .org for tickets. And especially for our really awesome KPOO listeners, if folks use the code SMILEYSF, so SMILEYSF, they can get a special discount on their ticket.
Oh, sweet. Smiley, S-M-I-L-E-Y-S-F. Get that discount. So how long does the show run?
The show runs about 75 to 80 minutes at this point. Yeah.
And how many, like when, how long can they see it?
So
the show runs through.
It's going to be February 28th through March 17th,
so
the next few weekends.
Okay.
And hopefully, if all things go well, we'll get an extension to the 24th. And Wednesday through Saturday, we have 8 p.m. shows, and Sundays we have 4 p.m. shows.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, if there's one last thing you would want to tell our listeners about your show, what would it be?
It is an invitation to a conversation, a pertinent one, and one that I hope also inspires people to action. It's really something that I think anyone on any side of San Francisco should come out and experience so that we can actually move towards a San Francisco that is not only remembering who we were and what we've accomplished so far, but also make space for the changes that are to come. But doing that with equity and love and accountability.
Excellent. Well, with that, Ashley Smiley, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Dirty White Teslas Make Me Sad. Go check it out. You'll be glad. You'll be glad that you did.
Maine, lay down and died with his hammer in his hand from driving that thing. Oh, driving that thing. All the laws of town talking about him driving that thing. All of a bill, he lived uptown. That thing is done carried him down, driving that thing, driving that thing, even down to the judges talking about him driving that thing. Uncle Bill called the doctor, says come out quick. I done got my hammer out of fix. I can't drive that thing.
Come on, doctor, come on.
Can't drive that thing. All the laws of town talking about him driving that thing.
Good driving.
doctor, the doctor said, driving that thing is going to kill you dead. Oh, driving that thing. Oh, driving that thing. Even down to the judges talking about him driving that thing. Uncle Bill was raggedy. He stayed out of sight. Every time you meet him, he would want to fight about driving that thing. About driving that thing. All the laws of town talking about him driving that thing. He stayed out last night, the night before. Come home this morning knocking on his door. He's just from driving that thing. He's just from driving that thing. Even down to the judges talking about him driving that thing.
Listening to 89.5 FM KPOO. Who's about to touch your mind right now? There is a new show, part of a trilogy, the third part of a trilogy called Unpacking P-Town, and the playwright is here to talk about it. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Jewel Gomez. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Excellent.
Well, I have questions. I have a lot of questions. First, let's talk about this whole trilogy aspect. So we've got Unpacking P-Town. What were the first two shows?
The first show in the trilogy was called Waiting for Giovanni, and it was about a moment in James Baldwin's life, an imagined moment, as he prepared to publish Giovanni's Room, and the kind of censure he received from various aspects of the community about his novel. And then the second one is called Leaving the Blues, mm-hmm. and it's about legendary singer-songwriter Alberta Hunter, mm-hmm. who was quite famous in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and then retired, and then came back in the 80s and sang until she died, to sold out houses until she died at about the age of 88. So, and it was about her struggles to hold on to the rights to her music and to sing the songs that she wanted to sing, even though people didn't think she was, quote unquote, traditionally attractive as an African American woman because she was brown skinned.
And so
that were the first two. Those were the first two pieces in the trilogy.
Mm-hmm. And then how does Unpacking P-Town fulfill that trilogy?
It is takes place in Provincetown, a small place in Cape Cod. And it's kind of based on my grandmother, mm-hmm. who was a dancer on vaudeville in the 30s and 40s, and had a group of gay friends who took cottages in the summer in Provincetown, and she used to go and visit them. And it's about what these artists who don't become famous like Baldwin or Alberta Hunter, mm-hmm. but who've had really amazing lives in the arts and understand how much the arts means to survival of people who are on the margins.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about what happens next when you're out of the limelight. And it's a comedy, and it has some music, some dancing. And really it has the main story is about how each of the characters decides on who they are, their identity, once they're out of the limelight.
Okay, okay. So you mentioned that is based on your grandma. So did she tell you stories when you were growing up about this stuff? Or like, how did you find out about all of the stuff that she did and the group of friends and all of that?
Well, yeah, she and my great-grandmother raised me, so I had quite a bit of quite a few conversations with her about her wild youth and traveling, and including some of the stories I tried to get into the play, like being lost in Montreal with a group of dancers and bumping into this guy in the in Montreal in the fog,
mm-hmm.
and this guy who's very cheerful and funny, and he said, "Oh, just follow me." And they said, "Well, do you know where you're going?" He said, "Nope, but just follow me." And it turned out to be Sammy Davis Jr.
I love it.
And how they would have all these adventures, and the thing that was most impressive to me is that through the years, even off stage, how many of them remained friends and supportive to each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I used to visit once a summer. I would get to have a weekend on Cape Cod in the cottage with her old dance partners and singers and stuff. And it was lovely to me to see my grandmother as a lively person in her milieu,
mm.
and to see other people, gay people, who were a big part of her community.
Very nice, very nice. So when you were growing up then and you would hear these stories, as you entered into your adulthood, did you hope that you would have the same kind of adventures?
Well, since I had no musical ability whatsoever, I was really interested in how community was created, how people maintained connections with each other, the kinds of empathy that people could have for each other, even though they came from very different places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of her dearest friends at this time, the fellow whose cottage she stayed in, was a gay man from Scotland, and they were dear, dear friends. And so I was interested in how we as humans can maintain contact with each other, even when we're really very different
mm-hmm.
from each other. And that has become kind of the basis of my political work and my political life as a lesbian feminist. How do we create community and respect each other in the world?
Got it. So who are the characters and who are the actors who bring these characters to life?
Ah, okay. Well, it's a very eclectic group. It's a small cast, and it is the first is Lydia, the woman who is my grandmother,
mm-hmm.
and she is part of her struggle is in the play is coming to grips with being part Wampanoag Indian,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a, you know, in the 50s and 60s, it was unusual to have an actual Native American person alive and in the community, out in the community as the dancers and all of that. So she is the part of the story, which is somewhat true, but she is struggling with how to be out as a Wampanoag Indian.
Okay.
another character is Buster, who had been her dance partner. And Lydia is played by Awele, mm-hmm. who's done a lot of work in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And her former dance partner is Buster, who grew up quite poor and looks at learning to tap dance as a way that saved him from being in jail, really.
Sure.
And that character, Buster, is played by Sean J. West, who has directed and acted in the Bay Area quite a bit. And Scotty, who is Buster's lover and Lydia's friend, is played by Matt Weimer. And he was also in my Alberta Hunter play, Leaving the Blues. And his role is to figure out who he is as an older man who used to be a singer. Is he still a singer? What does he do for himself in his community? And because he's in a largely people of color community, how does he learn to be a part of it and be respectful of it? And Desiree Rogers plays their friend who was on the stage and did costumes and painted sets. Desiree Rogers plays Araminta, who's named after, Araminta, who did the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. So she plays Araminta, and she's a kind of a tough butch lesbian who's recovering from heartbreak and has to figure out how to do that while they're there for the summer. And the last character is called Anando, and he's a young Portuguese boy, 18, 19, and he's played by Stephen Konofsky. And Anando has grown up with his father in the Portuguese community in Cape Cod, and he wants to be a painter, so he has to get the courage to let his father know he's not going into the baking business, but he's going to Paris.
God.
And he is close friends with this group of artists and who encourage him. So it's kind of lively. Singing, there's some singing, there's some dancing, there's a lot of laugh, but there's really a stress on how do we figure out who we are.
Got it. Well, we just have 1 minute left. So in that minute, when and where does it play, and how does our listening audience get tickets?
Okay. Unpacking in P-Town is at New Conservatory Theater Center, which is in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
On Van Ness Avenue. And they are the ones, New Conservatory Theater produced all three plays in the trilogy. And it's going to run from March 1st through the 31st.
Oh, very nice.
And New Conservatory Theater Center is easily findable on Google. And it's like probably one of the oldest queer theaters in the country, and has done a beautiful job in producing my work over the past decade. So I'm very grateful to New Conservatory Theater and hope I get to see people there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Jewel Gomez, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Marilyn, thank you for having me. I'll look forward to seeing you, and we'll be having fun singing along at the show.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you again. Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Unpacking P-Town. Let's hear some Alberta Hunter.
Look what the sun has done to me. It seems there's no more fun to me. Why must all the boys act so shy? I have guessed the reason why. I may be as brown as a berry, but that's only secondary, and you can't tell a difference after dark. I may not be so appealing, but I've got that certain feeling, and you can't tell the difference after dark. They say that gentlemen prefer the blonde-haired ladies. Tell me, am I out of style just because I'm slightly shady? Wait until I've won ya, and my love drops down upon ya. You can't tell the difference after dark.
Oh, that is Alberta Hunter. You Can't Tell the Difference After Dark from the Copulating Blues CD. You know what? It's the last Monday of the month, which means I have my librarianista du jour here to talk about all the fun and exciting things that are about to happen at the library. I'd like to welcome Kate Patterson. Hello, hello, hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. So, Kate, there's so much going on. I want to make sure we get it all in. So I'm just going to let you kick it off with what's the one thing you want to make sure the audience knows about.
Thank you so much. Well, this Saturday, we have an unbelievable event planned for everyone. It's called the Night of Ideas. This is the fifth Night of Ideas. And this is a project that we do with the French Consulate's Villa Albertine, which is their artist in residence program, KQED, and our curating partner, Circuit Network. And what we do is we program all seven floors of the main library with talks and performances and other really fun interactive activities. And the event goes into the wee hours of the night and includes a dance party. And so it is just a fabulous event. It's hard to encapsulate all that it is. I think we have more than 100 performers and presenters, and it's free, and I'm happy to sort of walk you through the different chapters of the evening, but I hope everyone can join us.
Well, I went last year for the first time, and I just had a blast. I thought I was just going to put in an appearance, and I ended up staying with everybody. So I want our listening audience to hear about it, because I just thought it was amazing, and I'm going to go again this year.
Oh, good. Well, I'm so happy to hear that, and I can't wait to see you there. And it's great that you've been there, so you understand that it is just, it's huge. It's a huge event. So I just wanted to highlight for your listeners that for the first time, we heard everyone's feedback loud and clear that we're having a family program that kicks off at 4 p.m. We're calling it the Afternoon of Ideas. And we have some wonderful programs for kids of all ages, including a special talk by award-winning author Maggie Takuda Hall and author illustrator Cindy Santamaria. They're going to do a special workshop about telling your family story with an illustration component. The San Francisco Ballet is going to be in the house to do a fun interactive dance class for ages 2 through 7. We also have a French pastry chef who is the Villa Albertine's current chef in residence, who's going to do a fun interactive taste and talk in our teen center. And then we have two craft making programs, one with the Asian Art Museum and one with PBS Kids Makers Craft with our beloved drag story hour performer Persia. And that is all happening on the second floor of the main library. And outside the library this year, we're really excited to host this wonderful art installation by the folks who brought us the Muni Raise Me exhibition, which some of your listeners may have gone to at SOMART. They have, they're bringing this decommissioned Muni bus that was turned into an altar to San Francisco. And I just think it's a must-see. It is the most beautiful homage to San Francisco and to folks who were born and raised in San Francisco and raised on Muni. And again, it's free, and I hope everyone comes early and checks it out. And that will be here on site into the evening as well. So there's other opportunities to check that out. So the Afternoon of Ideas kicks things off. I think that one of the things that we really wanted to achieve with this year's program is that I know so many of us are just so sick and tired of all the negative headlines we keep seeing about our city, that we really wanted to infuse the evening with some levity and with some celebration of our city and all of its beauty and complexities. And so we have some wonderful programs that are just that. Thanks to the support of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, we have a real celebration of Muni in public transportation. We have Jeffrey Tumlin, who's going to be leading a panel called Muni is Community. And then we also, I mentioned the bus already, but then we have a zine-making workshop with Tania Lunsford-Links and Abalones, again, sort of centered around the theme of Muni Raised Me. We have a really fun trivia with prizes, interactive panel with the author of Muni is My Ride, Leah Fisher. Mm-hmm. And so just some fun ways to, I think, focus on the positives. We have stand-up comedy, we have improv, so lots of opportunities to have fun and laugh and have a good time.
Yeah, and I can't stress enough that there's so much going on. I was running up and down the stairs the whole time I was there. It's like, oh, there's musicians over here. Oh, there's musicians over here. Oh, there's a comedy thing. Oh, there's a big drag. I just thought it was amazing. So I'm very excited that our listening audience is hearing about it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the hardest thing about the evening is really deciding what to see. And I think people are going to have some tough choices. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible to see all the things that you're going to want to see.
Yeah.
So as soon as you make peace with that, I think the better. But you are going to be dazzled no matter where you are in the building. A couple other things I wanted to highlight that we're bringing back this year is on the fourth floor, we have a small business marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, we did this as an experiment last year, and it turned out to be hugely successful. It's a wonderful way to see who is in our community, who are, you know, the makers of our community, who are driving our small business engine in the city. And we have some wonderful vendors coming out, so you can shop too. We'll have some food trucks out on Fulton Street Plaza, so you don't have to worry about where you're going to go eat. Mm-hmm. During the evening, we've got that covered. We have lots of, we have bars throughout the building as well. Ambassador Jam. I also want to highlight that for those folks who haven't come down to see the Tour de Black Aesthetic, the photographs of Kenneth P. Green from the 1960s and 70s here at the main library, we're offering a tour of the exhibition with Kenneth P. Green's son, Kenneth Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a wonderful storyteller, and it's just, and it'll be a fantastic way to get under the skin of this exhibition and hear the behind the scenes from someone who was a part of his father's life and knows all the people and really just brings a lot of color to the exhibition and all the stories surrounding the beautiful images that you see on view.
Excellent, excellent. And for our listening audience, who, for the regular library goers, because the event is happening this Saturday, March 2nd, the library won't open until 4 p.m. That's correct?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we're closed for regular library service on that Saturday just so we can prepare for the fun. And the Afternoon of Ideas kicks off at 4 p.m. and the event goes to 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Taking us out in the evening, we have DJ Beatific and the Giants resident DJ Umani spinning some tunes. So there'll be a fun dance party at the top of the building. So we hope people stick around and finish the night up with us.
Yeah, and that's at the main library, which is, right outside the Civic Center underground.
Yeah, it's not even a block away. If you exit, it depends on which way you go, but if you exit towards Hyde Street, it's not even a block away. It's very, very close. And there's also parking in Civic Center Garage.
Yes, and I just love that event. But I don't want to suck all the air out of all the other things that are happening at the library. So what else have you got going on?
Well, what I do like to say about the Night of Ideas is if you haven't engaged with the library in a while, it's a great way to sort of just see a concentrated view or experience a concentration. Mm-hmm. Really, the things that we do all year round. I mean, every year we have we bring incredible world-class speakers, we do arts programming, we have performances, so it's a great way to sort of just get a concentrated version of all the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really looking forward to our One City, One Book campaign. We just announced the book, and that is for everyone who is not familiar. It's our citywide book club.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a book by Catherine Ma, and it's wonderful because it's set in San Francisco. It's called The Chinese Groove. And so we have that to look forward to this spring. We're also busy planning for the summer. We have our Summer Stride program that we do every summer. So I hope you'll have us back so we can talk a little bit more about that.
You know, the library gets, they get to have every month you guys are on. And I'm happy to have you on more than that if need be.
Sounds good.
So we've talked about the Night of Ideas, and we've talked about the new book that's coming up. So what other things are happening in March that you'd like our listeners to know about? Or are there ongoing programs that you want to make sure our listeners know about?
Well, we still have a few More Than a Month programs planned. So More Than a Month is our celebration of Black History and Culture. We do not just stick to that, you know, one Black History Month time frame. We really do those programs all year round, but we always like to kick off Black History Month with sort of a concentration of mm-hmm. programming. And so we have a graphic novel program coming up, and it is at Glen Park, and that is going to focus on the book Battle Royale, and so there's something for teens. We also have a book club on The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. We have film screening. So if you go to our homepage and you click on More Than a Month on the landing page,
mm-hmm.
then you can see some of our upcoming things, which again happen all year round. And gosh, I mean, we just, you know, I really just recommend people coming to the website and clicking on the events tab and just kind of scrolling through and maybe spend a little time discovering what's happening at your local branch. There's 27 locations plus the main that makes 28. So there's really things happening all the time near you.
And if there's, is there a program that you want to make sure that people know about, like that some ongoing program that maybe is not highly visible but should be?
Well, I really would love to emphasize our exhibitions program. I mean, we have a fantastic exhibitions team. I mentioned the current exhibition, Toward a Black Aesthetic, Kenneth P. Green Sr.'s Photographs of the 1960s and 70s. Kenneth P. Green was the first Black photographer for the Oakland Tribune. But we change those exhibitions out pretty regularly, and they're free. So, you know, if you love art, everything we do here is free, and, you know, we put on some beautiful shows. I do want to highlight another exhibition or exhibit that mm-hmm. we have on the third floor, in part in the African American Center. It's called We Were Here, and it is an exhibit that was created by an artist in residence named Tania Lunsford Links, who I think she's a fourth generation San Franciscan. And it's about, she was embedded at the library for several months, and she spent a lot of time in our history center, and she discovered an oral history by a Black American resident in San Francisco who lived here in the 1800s. He lived through the 1906 earthquake, and his name was Aurelius Alberga.
Mm-hmm.
And she discovered this oral history, and then she wrote this beautiful, provocative poem, homage to Black residents who've been in San Francisco since its founding, but who have been erased from history. And mm-hmm. she really talks about the earthquake as being this rupture in the city's history, but just the fact that it's not the only one. Like, redevelopment would be considered another rupture, and just about you kind of repositioning the Black community within San Francisco's history. It's really beautiful, and so I also recommend that.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Kate, I want to thank you not even just for being here, but for all the things that the libraries in the world do, because I love libraries. I love them, love them, love them. And just the fact that you're having the Night of Ideas and you have all of these things that people can just go and enjoy, you don't need money to enjoy it. That in this day and age, that's a real blessing. So thank you. And all of the Librarianistas, I want to thank you guys.
Great. Well, it's our pleasure. And you're right. San Francisco is an expensive place, but everything at the library is free. In fact, we say the best things in life are free at the library.
That is true. All right. Well, Kate Patterson, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, people of Earth, there's so much going on at the library. I highly recommend the Night of Ideas. I had so much fun, and again, and I lost weight just going up and down the stairs. They do have elevators, but I liked walking up and down the stairs to see everything over and over again. It's just about time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and tiddly-doo.